Welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. Today in the studio for a second mentoring conversation, we have Glenn McCluskey. Hi, Glenn.
Hi.
How are you?
I am very good today. Thank you.
Yeah. How are you feeling deep down in your heart?
I feel fine. Enthusiastic.
Oh, great. All right. Well, as we've mentioned in our first session with Glenn, he's a business and nonprofit law attorney. He founded McCluskey Law Office in 2010, a privately held law firm and professional services firm that offers a variety of legal services to support your business or nonprofit. He focuses on those in the startup phase or those looking to expand their existing organization. He is invested in getting you set up for success. He can advise you in every stage of your business launch process, from organizational development to risk reduction to contract drafting. He can help ensure that your new venture is legally sound. He also provides custom, comprehensive business plans, which you heard in our first session are really, really important. And he's been around for a long time. He's been in a number of different partnerships and businesses. And I've been in business since 1992, and I've worked solely on working with entrepreneurs, thousands of them, with the business planning process. And we both have the same opinion. It's really, really important. It's better to make mistakes on paper than it is in your pocketbook.
Mm-hmm.
Some other legal services that Glenn offers is business entity creation, operating and buy-sell agreements,
mm-hmm.
and licensing.
Yes.
What would you like to share about those three areas?
Well, I'll talk about the so-called buy-sell. People don't really know what it is. Somebody says you should have one, and they say, okay. Shareholder control agreement, operating agreement. It's probably all the same document. At least that's the way I do it. You can make separate documents, and then you just have a lot of documents floating around. So if you have more than one owner in a business – in other words, it's not a one-person corporation or a one-person LLC, or it's not between a husband and wife. If you have multiple people who are not like that, you should have some kind of an agreement as to how the business should run. Okay, so similar to the business plan, you want to have a plan for how to run this business. You can fight about it instead and go to court and sue everybody when it all blows up, but wouldn't it be nice to just do it at the beginning? And so that's what I do. So an operating agreement will have in it things like who owns how much of this business. That's nice to know. How do we divide profits and losses? What if we need more capital? Where is it going to come from? Can we make everyone put money in, like if there's five owners? What happens if someone else wants to buy in and we either like them or we don't like them? What happens if you want to sell your interest in this business? Who can you sell it to? What happens if you drop dead or you get divorced? We don't want to have necessarily your spouse end up as our partner. So we have to have provision for that, that it can happen automatically as to what happens there. And then when it does come time to sell, the question is, how much do we sell it for? I don't know. Nobody knows. So you can have a lot of, spend a lot of money and time on appraising the business. And to me, you know, not to say anything bad about appraisers, they are an essential part of the economy, but it's a little bit of a black art because, you know, one appraiser is going to say this and another appraiser is going to say that. And if you wink at one of them, you might be able to affect the numbers, right?
Yeah.
So we can do away with that in many cases by saying, if you sell, here's the price. You know, your shares are worth this. And you might say, well, what if it goes up over time? What about that? Well, part of the operating agreement says that the board can get together and set the price by approval, acclamation, resolution, whenever they please. And they can have this is the price for shares today or between the two dates. So if anyone wants to sell or dies or what have you, this is the price they sell at. Okay. And then if the business changes, as it will, then you should have another board meeting and decide another number. Okay. And you can do that as often as you want. So, but if you forget to do it, you fall back on the one that exists. And so you can do it that way. Or you can also have some hybrid provision where you can do that plus in certain circumstances, have a bunch of appraisals.
Sure.
And then who pays for the appraisals? The business, the buyer, the seller, the new person coming in, all that should be in such an agreement. So that's the buy-sell aspect.
And the licensing part. How do you work with a client in coming up with a licensing their product or service?
Well, doing that right now, today, in fact, working with someone who has an invention. Which, you know, it's not like a perpetual motion machine or anything like that. It's a practical thing that does something that somebody wants, okay? He owns the patent. He doesn't wish to sell it and be done. He wishes to continue to make money off of his fine patented invention.
Okay.
So licensing allows him to sell the rights to someone else to use it for a particular purpose, for a particular time, for a particular price. And perhaps he can sell it to John to do this thing in Montana, and he can sell it to Sally to do this thing in Hawaii, and he can sell it to Ben to do this thing in Delaware. And he retains control of it. He knows how much he's going to get. He knows that they can't steal it. They can't re-engineer it. They can't compete against him, and we know how long this relationship lasts. So all those things go into a licensing. And as I had my online article, I call it licensing, selling the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yes.
Because in the old days, the old story was somebody, you'd go to New York and somebody would sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. Well, that's nice. Anybody would sell it over and over and over again. Well, of course, he's not allowed to sell the Brooklyn Bridge, and he's certainly not allowed to sell it over and over again. But in licensing, you can. And sell it over and over again, and you still own it. It's just like magic. it depends on what we do. So oftentimes, if you're working with a sophisticated client, they might have their own lawyer. The other side might have their own lawyer, and they might propose an agreement. This often happens. And then they send it over to us, and we mark it up and do what I talked about in the earlier session that we recorded, negotiate, modify, say, we don't like this, we do like this, how about this, and get it all redlined. And then I talk it over with the client, and we decide what he likes and what he thinks is too much or too little, and clean it up and send it off to the other side, and then they respond back, and this could go back and forth a few times.
Sure.
And then it gets signed, and then the deal is done, and everybody's good, and everybody makes money.
Is that your favorite part of it?
It is my favorite part of it. I like to make money too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll put the links to your LinkedIn articles.
Okay.
So that people can read those. We mentor. There's lots of challenges in running a business, and one of them is staying kind of connected with your partner. Your spouse, mm-hmm. your closest person to you. And how have you found it in your relationship? You've been married since 1985?
Yes.
Big smile on your face.
31 wonderful years. Every second of it was great. Idyllic.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So tell us more.
Well, my wife and I are just kind of a good match.
What's your name?
She is Holly.
Holly.
From Chicago. And I think that helps. And I'll get into that in a minute if I remember. But she is also the youngest child. I'm the youngest child in my family. She's the youngest child as well. So we're both kind of spoiled, right? And we're used to being the youngest child, not having anybody else around. So there's two of us in the house and a couple of cats. And it's a big enough house that we can stay away from each other some of the time. Which I think is very important.
Yeah.
And she has a job and I have a job and she works long hours and I work long hours. And, you know, we see each other every day in the morning usually and at night. And we get along pretty good. That's the thing. And I don't push her buttons. She doesn't push my buttons because her parents, when they were alive, and mine too, and I think it's quite common, well, after they're married for a while, that seems to be their main sport. Just push each other's emotional buttons, and then they argue, and, you know, who needs it? I don't understand it.
Yeah.
So if you can avoid that, I think it's great. I mean, it does really take two people to argue, so we try not to, and we seldom, very seldom argue about anything.
Well, I imagine the skills that you use in negotiating different deals, do they help in talking through things and getting the issues out on the table?
Yeah. And I mean, it goes both ways. When I negotiate a deal, I don't seek to insult the other side. I don't do that intentionally or get them all riled up or, you know, have them pull back and dig in their heels. I mean, that doesn't help you. Some people would like that because it gives them a visceral thrill, I guess. People love a train wreck, right? But that doesn't really get you where you want to go in the long run. So yeah. The marriage, I think, is the same. And negotiating, I think, is the same. Because then at the end of the day, when the deal is done, everyone seems to respect you, which I kind of like. You know, that's what my life and my business is built on. If I can't get people to respect me, then I'm done.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think people respect me too much, but that's the way that goes.
Yeah. And the pressure and the stresses in the legal profession seem to be really more than most.
Yes.
Because it's so adversarial a lot of the times.
Yes.
Now, what are your coping strategies?
Well, my main coping strategy is to try not to do stuff that I don't like to do because it's totally adversarial. So I don't do criminal law because I couldn't stand it. For one thing, that would be too depressing and it would be too much. Some people love it and they do a great job of it. And my goodness, it is absolutely essential to have this, but I couldn't do that. The other is family law, the same. You know, adoption and divorce and child custody, and this goes on, and people make a ton of money on it. I'm not cut out for doing that. No way. I couldn't separate myself from the emotional side, so I don't do that.
Yeah.
But we do have litigation, which I do some of, and deal making. I mean, I do some work with people that owe someone money or vice versa, and that can, all those things get contentious. But you just have to work them through.
What kinds of things do you litigate?
Business situations. So, I mean, ideally, if something goes awry, you have to be able to say, well, you know, you've breached the contract. Don't you want to cure the problem? And they go, well, we don't think we breached, and we're not going to cure the problem. And heck with you. I say, well, according to this, you're supposed to do X, and you're supposed to pay us X. And they go, we're not going to do that. Well, you can just go home and quit. But, you know, the law provides a remedy. That's the definition of a contract. You know, an agreement between two or more parties for which the law provides a remedy. It's one of the definitions of a contract. So you've got to be able to say to them, well, I'm sorry, then we're going to have to sue you. And we'll see you in court. It'll be a long time from now, but we'll see you there. So that would be one of those things. So I have recently worked on something for a contractor who is a designer of software, okay? And he had an agreement with someone to do this, and they worked together for a long time fine, and then they didn't. So we had to litigate a matter having to do with real estate. I had a home builder who bought, which we just settled. He builds houses for people based on a contract. Okay, I'll build your house. Here's the contract. And then he gets the house built, and they don't want to buy the house. This is kind of a problem.
Yeah.
So if we can't, you know, you've got to be able to have the court system there as leverage. It's litigation generally is a slow, wasteful process, but it has to always be looming over there and you have to be able to use it if need be because otherwise you can't move it forward.
Yeah. And what are the kinds of things that you like that bring you the greatest joy as an attorney?
I like to get a complete deal and get it done. I mean, my tagline is always business launch wants to see you succeed, or business launch wants you to succeed. And it's true. So if I can tie up all the loose ends, get it all done to the best of my ability, so it's, I know it's going to flow right and everybody knows what they're supposed to do, sign on the dotted line and send them off into the ether to do their thing. And the same is very true when I set up a nonprofit corporation from scratch, which I do, and help them get their tax-exempt status, 501c3 or 4 or 7 or whatever it's going to be. You know, these are a bunch of people that come together. They want to do something for the social good. It's a very complicated process, and I can help them do it. And then again, send them off, spinning off into the universe. I like to do that. Okay. And then I'm done with it. Now, they can certainly are invited to call me back if they have many issues in the future. But at that point, you know, they're off in their orbit.
What kind of books or resources have you found valuable for entrepreneurs and business owners?
I'm not sure if I'm the best person to ask that question to, because I don't read business books per se. If that's
read?
What you're getting at. I mean, I find them bad for the most part. I mean, okay. I've tried to look at them, but it's like, okay, this is a fad, which, you know, I can read it and then maybe I'll get something out of it. Or I read a book and I go, okay, this book is 100 pages long. It could be 2 pages long and it contains the same information. So there's no point in that. You know, for me, if I need information, I go and get the information. I don't read a long book about something.
I see.
So that's what I do, and I don't otherwise wish to tell anyone what they should look at or read. I mean, that's really up to them or someone else who is in a better position to advise them.
Do you have any fun apps on your phone?
Oh, sure, I got fun apps. Of course, I have my Fitbit app, which I like. That's a great affirmation for me because I can show my heart rate when I work out and everything else. I did have the Ghost Detector app, but that really was short-term fun.
Okay. What was that?
You're supposed to find ghosts.
Okay.
So you aim it at somebody, you get some ghosts. I have the Tracker app for myself. Shows me where I went, in case I forgot. Like, I recently visited New Orleans, and so, you know, it resets every day. It can show you all the places you went.
Oh.
So that's kind of fun. Uses a lot of juice. Those are some of them.
Okay. How do you keep pace with technology? And what do you use technology for in your business?
Whatever I can. I've never been technology adverse. I always embrace it. I mean, so like I'm now getting up there in years, but I don't see this as a big issue. I mean, as long as you have a cognitive capacity to learn these things. So, you know, I use whatever I can use. I mean, I get my smartphone, which is the greatest thing ever. It does what I need to do. I couldn't do my business without it. You know, that's why I bought it. It's got my email on there. I got a pen. I can write things. Yeah. I can do text. I can take a lot of great pictures, which I do. This phone takes great pictures. And I enjoy taking photos. And so, you know, I have a laptop computer, take that wherever I need to go. I got wireless connections at almost every place. Most of the work I do is business related. Okay. So I'm not an attorney like in the olden days so much where you sit in your office all day smoking a pipe and then somebody comes and knocks on your door and, you know, then you talk to him for an hour and like that. I don't want to do that unless it's necessary. I don't even see well over half my clients. I don't see them.
Oh, it's all over the phone?
Yeah, because when I worked for Wells Fargo, I had clients all over the country. I never saw them. There's no need. If they want to know what I look like, I'll send them a picture. Or they can look at the website, right?
Yeah.
But, we call, you know, we do email, we exchange documents, and we simply get the job done. So in the olden days, it would take so long to do the work in a modern legal office. And I've been in large law firms and they still spend way too much time doing things that they could do much more efficiently. So I don't have that kind of a staff, so I do it more efficiently. You know, I keep track of everything I do in some form of document. I save things. This is why I don't like texts, for one thing, because you can't save a text. At least I don't know how. But I can save an email. I can save the guts of the email. I can paste it to a Word document, and I can have a running log of my communication with everybody.
What kind of leadership groups are you a part of, or how do you stay current in the field? Are you part of other organizations and members of them? How do you connect and get clients?
Well, I used to be very active in the Hennepin Bar Association. I'm not at the present time, but I was very, very heavily involved when I was an in-house counsel. And I was on the board of directors. I rewrote their bylaws for the Hennepin County Bar Association because I was asked to, and I really needed it. I was also on the creditor-debtor section of the Hennepin Bar Association, because at the time I worked for the American Collectors Association, which is a trade group of debt collectors. So I set up, I created what we call CLEs, Continuing Legal Education Seminars, which lawyers have to have every year. And I, you know, get people, speakers in. Sometimes I'd give them myself, but I would also book speakers and present it to the crowd and also on webcast. So that was great. I was a member of the American Corporate Counsel Association, which is just what it says. That was great. Great networking with people. Lawyers all across the state, in-house mostly. Sometimes government, for instance. Meeting all those people was great, and I like them because they really throw a lot of good parties. They were much better than the Hennepin Bar in that regard, because most of the Hennepin Bar lawyers are button-down downtown lawyers, which is not my style. My style is not that. Okay, so if you're going to have fun, let's have fun, and let's move on with ourselves. I'm a member of BNI, Business Network International, which is a leadership role, but it is one of the ways I get my clients. I also get clients from Springboard for the Arts, which is an arts group. They refer some people to me, and ordinarily I give them X amount of consultation for free, and if they want to hire me further, they can.
So the BNI group, so that's a weekly networking group.
Yes.
I used to be part of that.
Yeah.
So what? Where's your group located?
We are in Roseville, Minnesota.
Okay.
Meet every Thursday at 8 a.m. I like 8 a.m. because it's not 7 a.m. And I'm not an early person. I like to get up late and stay up late. It doesn't always work out right.
Yeah. So BNI is a place, and also Springboard.
Yeah.
For the arts, where you get a lot of clients.
I wouldn't say I get a lot, but I do get some, and they are artists, which I like to work with.
Yeah.
And they have individual needs. It's not always just about art. It might be about their personal self or their business, intellectual property, real estate, who knows what. So I love working with those folks. And they don't have a lot of money, so naturally I don't make a lot of money from them.
Yeah. And how do you make sure that you're not getting isolated in your private practice? Has that ever been an issue?
I guess it is an issue, and the answer is I don't know if I'm isolated. I work largely alone, but I do talk to my clients and other attorneys and counterparties and government people and whoever I have to talk to.
Do you have any administrative staff?
No, not at the present time.
Oh, you're doing it all.
To me, it just would take me longer. I mean, if I get enough business at any given time that I could use such a person, that's great.
Yeah.
And I would like that. But usually I'm able to manage it okay. I don't know why. I'm just efficient. I mean, I was a journalist. I can type really fast. my mother was a stenographer for 44 years. She taught me how to file how to write notes to myself and how to staple things together and how to retrieve things and how to keep records and how to write checks. And I use all those skills when I do my own business and also when I help other people with their business.
Well, that's a really huge issue in the field is organization.
It is, and I'm a very organized person, and I enjoy it.
Yeah.
A person who I shall leave nameless that I worked for a while, who was a big mucky muck in the organization. The first time I met him, her, I went into the office and there was junk piled everywhere. I mean, if he could put it on the ceiling, it would have been there. It was on the floor, the chair, the desk, the shelf. And I said to him, well, I'm glad that you might want to hire me because I'd love to help you clean this up. And he didn't say no. And so for the next several months, that's what I attempted to do. However, unbeknownst to me, he didn't want it cleaned up. He just wanted to live in this relative pigsty.
Yeah.
And you'd go into the office and you have to take junk off the chair if you want to sit down. And God forbid, if you would ever give him something to review, say, here's a piece of physical paper, I'm setting it on your desk, would you be able to review this by next week? He'd say, yes, I can. And you'd come in next week and I'd say, did you review the thing? And he'd go, what are you talking about? And I'd say, well, I put it on the desk here. Oh, let's look for it. Gone. This is not efficient. This is chasing your tail. So let's not do that.
Well, and I think I'm kind of guilty of this myself. I'm kind of get piles because...
Piles aren't so bad if you know what's in them. But you should also have files and be able to put something somewhere and then know where it is and retrieve it. And that goes for a paper file as well as a computer file.
Yeah, right. Keeping track of all that.
And I use a system that's relatively intuitive. So I put stuff the first place I think it should be. And then when I'm looking for it, I got a pretty good idea where it is. It's probably the first place I think it should be.
Okay. That's a good way to think about it and do it. The last question before we kind of wrap up a second conversation here, how do you store all your online files? Like, do you have them in the cloud?
No, I have three hard drives.
Okay.
So I just copy, I got one terabyte hard drives. So I copy everything on one, and then a week later, I copy everything on two. And then a week later, I copy everything on one, copy everything on two.
I see.
That's what I do. I hope that's a good idea, but it's pretty effortless.
Yeah.
Unless the house burns down, then you got a problem. I mean, but I do not store it on the cloud, but I think it would be a fine idea.
Yeah. What's keeping you from storing in the cloud?
I don't know. Oh. I'll look at it. Good idea.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, you got an idea out of our conversation today. Excellent.
Many. I have many.
Oh, you do. Good. Well, this has been just a delight.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to be here and to share with our listeners different aspects of your life and some of your expertise and your philosophies about different things. And I think entrepreneurs do need to be organized and they need to take the time to organize.
Agreed.
Their activities. Many times we're so focused on generating income and doing the work to do that, that we don't put systems in place that help support the work that we're doing.
Absolutely.
So, anyways, thank you for all your tips. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And Mike Cabea, thank you, our sound engineer and photographer. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in for another great mentoring conversation. We'll see you next Monday.
Do you want to promote your business and grow in your leadership skills? Here are a few ways you can promote your business and get leadership help through We Mentor, Inc. You can be a podcast guest. Challenge yourself to share who you are on air. We'll help you out. Secondly, you can sponsor our podcast program. You can invest a small fee to have you and your company name announced at the beginning and end of one or more shows. The third way that you can promote your business and grow in your leadership skills is you can set up an individual strategy session to do work one-on-one with me, focusing on specific life and leadership issues and skills you want to acquire. Or the fourth way is you can join an entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab. These ELM labs start throughout the year. They are small groups of 5 to 9 business owners who are out to profoundly shift their lives and lead with authenticity. In 2016, I became a registered yoga instructor and mindfulness meditation teacher. I also became certified online with Brené Brown's Brave Leadership and Courage Works courses to learn an effective process of being all in, falling, getting up, and trying again. In turn, I can mentor others in how to dare greatly and rise strong. I feel better equipped to help you forge ahead in these times of great uncertainty. Our Entrepreneurial Leadership and Mentoring Lab process is an integrated approach to leadership development. We do yoga, meditation, and leadership revolution skill setting. Yes, we will help you learn how to strengthen your body, strengthen your mind, and increase your emotional stamina as part of our leadership development process. Along with learning about real-world business planning and strategic planning, we do what works. Get involved, get started. You can reach me at 612-804-8920 or go to wementor.com and connect with us. Lastly, if you like our podcast program, help us keep it going. You can donate to our program. Just go to the wementor.com website, click on Buy button, and fill in the donation amount that you would like to contribute. We appreciate any and all contributions. See you next week.